Welcome back to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. For the fourth time in 2 years, corrections officers at the Cotton Correctional Facility in Jackson lost a fellow officer to suicide. Michael Perdue, a longtime CO at Cotton, died by suicide earlier this year. And again, that bears repeating. Fourth corrections officer at Cotton to die by suicide within 2 years. Corrections officers hope these suicides might focus attention onto the pressures of working with prisoners. To better understand this issue, we've reached out to Carrie Johnson, a corrections officer at the Cotton Correctional Facility. She has been there since 1995. In 2017, Carrie was named Correctional Officer of the Year. Before we begin, a note of warning, there is some graphic language in the interview, and listener discretion is advised. So you are part of the union's efforts to help understand PTSD and other mental health issues that COs face. You're doing your own research into this. And it made me wonder, does the job of guarding prisoners change you?
Oh, my. Yes, I am absolutely not the same girl that I was 24 years ago. I have changed significantly, and most of us have.
How?
I think a natural thing is that we're more guarded. Initially, when I walked into this room, I wanted that chair because the corners felt a little bit more safe than the windows and door behind me, and I could check where my escape routes are and where my threat may come from. I find myself doing that a lot at dinner and at the mall or and those things. So,
and day in, day out, having that kind of being on guard, what does that do to you?
For me, 24 years ago, I was quite social and quite, I think I would even classify myself as kind of naive to the things that are out there. My poor son, I take that helicopter mom thing to a whole new level. So personally, I just feel like I'm a little bit more recluse than I possibly was before. So, yeah.
Help us understand what it's like working there in corrections to understand what causes these changes. What don't the rest of us get?
I was speaking to a coworker today that knew that I was coming here, and I asked him, I said, what do you think needs to be said? And he said, I think that they need to know that this is a whole different world. It's a whole community. We are dealing with the day-to-day issues that men in prison deal with. And we're kind of the psychologists, the first assessors in a doctor's office. We're parents. We're managing the day-to-day issues. And this morning we had a prisoner that in his kitchen duties cut his two fingers to the bone. And that's a medical emergency. So we respond to that and we make sure that the prisoner is taken care of. We make sure that they're going to school and to dental. And I think a lot of people have this idea that they're in a cell and we're just walking by and making sure that that's happening. And that's
stuff that you see in movies.
Yes. And that's not reality. And we have a lot of duties and more every day. I mean, corrections programming is a bipartisan push to make offenders into rehabilitated, better people.
And the one that's supposed to be responsible for that on the front lines would be you. So what led you to start doing your own research into mental health issues among COs?
Well, I'm heavily involved with my union. About, I want to say, 5 years ago, the executive board started with these initiatives that we needed to talk about. And one of them was called One Voice. And One Voice was, like I said earlier, there's a bipartisan push for correctional reform. For example, there's a discussion about segregation and how long a prisoner should be held in isolation. And we found that the people working the front lines weren't involved in the conversation. And so we started talking about how could we interject our voice back into the conversation. Because like I said earlier, we're talking to the men. We're the ones that will first assess whether or not they have mental health issues. And so we were trying to get our voice back in. And one of the things that we found through all of this was that correctional officers across the nation have a higher propensity towards drugs and alcoholism, divorce, and suicide. So I was talking about it in 2017 because I was on the initiative for PTSD and correctional fatigue. And I talked about it to the Jackson Citizen Patriot about how we have to do a better job at taking care of one another and check in. And then a couple days later, my mentor, my friend, probably the most professional man I've ever worked with in my life, killed himself 4 days after retirement. And it made me feel like such a fraud. Here I am, the officer of the year of the entire state of Michigan, talking about research and how we have to do a better job at taking care of each other. And then right back in my own facility, you know, this happened. And it was devastating because he was probably one of the best men I ever knew. And since then, we've had three more. And all three of them were very important to me. And I felt like a failure a little bit when that happened because I was like, the more educated I get on the subject, the more I feel like we really don't know. The three that followed the first, each one of them were people I would never expect.
And families, friends didn't see it?
No. With Michael Perdue, I'm sure you saw in the article, she said that she knew that her husband had been dealing with depression for the last year and a half. You would have never known it at work. You would have never known it talking to him.
Just to remind everybody, I'm talking with Carrie Johnson, who's a corrections officer at the Cotton Correctional Facility, as we talk about the problem of PTSD and, in particular, suicide among corrections officers at facilities around our state, particularly at Cotton, with four corrections officers dying by suicide within 2 years. You talked about something, a term I want you to tell us more about, correctional fatigue. What is that?
Well, it's kind of like what you asked me at the beginning. How has it changed you? And for officers, something happens. Fight breaks out, right? Typical, especially in like our level four prisoners, sometimes daily. Your automatic reaction as a normal citizen is to get away from the two people fighting. Our automatic reaction is to run to it. And after years of that, I find that my heart rate, my adrenaline, doesn't even change anymore. Sometimes I'm thinking about how this just messed up the rest of the day's events that I needed to make sure happened. So here we've lost a little bit of the human element of what happens. We had a brand new officer, young, really sharp, and he was the first responder to a prisoner that was taken into segregation, and he was being held in what we call the cage because it's where you're strip searched before you go into segregation. And the prisoner took off his clothing and tied it around his neck and then laced it through the cage to hang himself. The new hire cracked the door, saw him, did all of the right things. Perfectly executed reaction by this new employee. 2 days later, he had seen that I was doing work on this, and he pulled me aside. And he said to me, I can't get over the look on the guy's face. It was the strangest color. And my partners were walking around. We were away from inmates. We were back in the back. And our automatic reaction was to one-up him. Rather than say to him, are you okay? Let's talk about this. He told me he was having trouble sleeping after it because he kept seeing this colored face. And he's like, I just didn't think it would be like that. And then my other partner that walked by, and he says, oh, you should have seen the guy at Jackson Inside 10 years ago. This is what happened. And I think our natural reaction as correctional officers, instead of taking that kid aside and saying, listen, you should talk to a professional. You should talk to somebody about this trouble you're having sleeping. We want to make it normal for him. Meanwhile, horror films are showing those images to scare you. And we're trying to tell him, no, 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 that's normal. Let me tell you, the guy that came into the room to one-up the rookie, he later said to me, you know what, Carrie? I worked segregation for years. He said, and when I hired into this career, I loved the zoo. It was one of my favorite childhood pastimes. I love the animals. He says, years of working in segregation, years of going through the cells, checking to make sure that they're a live, breathing body. He says, you know what I can't do anymore? I can't go to the zoo anymore. He's retired now, but he described that to me And he says, do you know how weird that is, that I can't go to the zoo because I hate seeing the animals in their cages? And he says, but it's totally normal for me to see a human being in a cage. And I said, that's correctional fatigue.
Yeah.
That's correctional fatigue.
And how open are supervisors to understanding that amongst those of you who are on the front lines?
I had a lieutenant recently that she had an officer talking to her about bullets are only 15 cents and I'm better off to my family in this way. And she was looking for a protocol in which she should, as a shift commander, take care of that guy and make sure he's okay. She says, I know exactly what to do when a prisoner threatens suicide. I know exactly what to do. There's a whole policy directive. And she says, I feel undone because I don't know what to do for this guy. Because a lot of people will say, well, get him services. Mm-hmm. And then there's a fitness for duty clause where now, is he fit for duty? And if you say he's not, now we've just made his problems worse because now he's off of work.
Tell us what the overtime situation is in Michigan correctional facilities.
Well, there's several facilities in the state that are very short. Women's Huron Valley, right around the corner from here, Cotton Facility, RMI, Michigan Reformatory in Ionia, Marquette, Branch Prison. These prisons are short-staffed, and it is routine for these correctional officers to be mandated 16 hours, three or four times a week. And what mandates mean, and a lot of the public don't know, is that you can have plans. It could be your son's last football game. You could coach a football game. And I'm sorry, the gates are frozen. You try to leave, and no, you're in prison too. You're staying. And you can make a phone call when you get relief to do so. And so you have family members waiting on you sometimes, and you're not able to go. And you have loss of family and friends support in that way. I mean, there's women at Huron Valley Women's that admittedly say, I'm not raising my kids. I've missed out on their childhood. So mandatory overtime, it's an epidemic. It's something that the public does not realize. You know, my family still struggles with it. They're like, what do you mean you can't come to Christmas? You have 24 years and you still don't have enough seniority to have Christmas off? And no, actually, I don't. So it's another huge contributing factor to correctional fatigue.
So what could be changed? Let's start with the Department of Corrections that could help you and other corrections officers.
Well, there's currently a Senate bill that's been introduced, Senate Bill 228. It's a bill to create a suicide prevention commission. I think that's amazing. We've talked about the national problem. We've also found that Michigan is higher than other states. And the fact that they're introducing this bill and that they're acknowledging that there is an issue and that there should be research. And I'm happy to know that the language in this bill says that there's going to be someone in the front line talking about it. I just think we need officers at the table.
So officers would be included in this.
Yes.
But studies and research take time and commissions take time.
Yes.
What about the immediate needs?
Well, we used to have a thing called roll call. You were required to be at your shift and supervisors checked in, and we congregated together. And so I think an immediate fix for me would be introducing roll call back into correctional facilities where we're required to be together, hear what happened, go out together as one, relieve the previous shift together. Michael Perdue and I walked in together every day. And the day before he killed himself, he said, Carrie, can I talk to you for a minute? And we were both rushing to our assignments. And I said, sure, give me a call. And he didn't call. And so I feel really bad about that. He doesn't speak to anyone else before he gets to his assignment. We're walking at 6 a.m. in the dark to our assignments. And he worked in healthcare every day. So he saw all of the sick prisoners. And he saw all of the prisoners that had been in a fight or prisoners that were dying. And so the second he got there, it was, you know, on. And then we never got to check in with each other. He was in a busy assignment. So roll call would be nice. The other thing is that officers are subjected to what I believe is petty discipline. if you have outside stressors, where everybody does, there's financial problems, marital problems, problems with your kids. I believe that the reason why correctional officers have the higher rate is because when dealing with these outside entities, they also are not given a relief. You know, people come to another job and they have another duty where they can get rid of that. In our job, it's strength, and there's not an avenue to worry about the other stuff. And we have very strict discipline. For a while, there were people were getting disciplined for too many pens. So if I wear this jacket and I have a pen in this jacket and then I have two pens in this jacket, I'm violating the policy. And instead of saying, Carrie, take that other pen out to your car or throw it in the thing, I would get written up. And so the petty discipline makes it a pressure cooker when you're already dealing with negative comments from the prisoners, violence, and stuff like that, then we don't need the petty stuff on top of it.
Bottom line, in the last few moments we have, what do you want from the public?
You know, there's already a negative tone right now for anyone in law enforcement, right? And other places, fire departments, EMTs, the police department, they're able to do good, right? We often talk about we're the forgotten branch of law enforcement. We are saving lives, too. We are protecting the public, too. Some of the men I work with are the bravest I've ever seen, and they don't get acknowledgement for it. They're strong. They're smart. They're college-educated, many of them. And I think we're often placed in this category, like you said earlier, about, you know, we're like Andy Dufresne from the Shawshank Redemption, and we're not like that. We're not like that at all. In fact, when Michael took his life, there were prisoners crying because they needed him. They checked in with him every day when they went to go get their medication. They were impacted by the loss of that life, too. We're never given, it seems, the recognition of the protection of the public that we actually do. And I guess that would be my hope, is if you see a correctional officer, that you thank them for the job that they do, because it's a tough one.
Carrie Johnson, corrections officer at the Cotton Correctional Facility, thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
And a word to anyone who has thought of suicide, there is help for you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, calling the National Suicide Prevention Hotline, that number 1-800-273-TALK, T-A-L-K, 1-800-273-8255.